I feel like Cullinan and Diamond should come to South Africa.
But you have to understand, you know, the colonial mentality was that, well, we're here, we're in control, we've got guns, we can take what we want.
I mean, it's same as rape, if you ask me. Because you're taking what belongs to someone, someone's virginity, taking it away and then making it yours. And you see it everywhere, you see it in the music industry, you see it in the minerals industry.
You've taken advantage of what we did not know, but eventually we're going to reclaim whatever is ours.
The abuse that they effected on African people, the dispossession of their land, and the theft of the wealth of African people. The logic to it was that we were less than human beings.
Bring them back.
Artifacts, gold, books, skulls, diamonds, the list goes on. Colonialism, a word that evokes misery and anger amongst Africans. Decades later, Western countries still sit with valuables stolen from African soil, some worth millions, others priceless in ancestral value. The fight to bring the looted treasures home continues.
Welcome to Africa Now, I'm Paula Sleer. Last week, we were in Kenya, where we showcased the growing refugee crisis across Africa. There are at present around 30 million asylum seekers, internally displaced people, and refugees across the continent. Many the result of conflicts started by Western powers and which then spiraled out of control. Climate change and dwindling resources have further fueled the ongoing humanitarian disaster. If you missed the show, you can find it on any of the social media handles on the screen. This week, we come to you from South Africa's leading history museum in Johannesburg. It should showcase the rich past of both this country and the continent. But instead of gracing these shelves, some of the museum's most important artifacts are on display in museums in Western countries. They say a diamond is a girl's best friend, but far from being a friend, one of the world's most famous diamonds has caused nothing but heartache, anguish, and irreparable loss to its hometown. The story begins back in January 1905, when a glitter in the ground turned out to be the biggest rough, uncut diamond the world has ever seen. It was not far from here, in a town called Cullinan. Like all property at the time, the mine belonged to a European businessman, and the diamond was put on sale in London and eventually gifted to King Edward VII. Today, calls to return the diamond have become a national debate. Voices are becoming louder. One of them is the Economic Freedom Fighters, a South African opposition political party that has always been vocal in fighting against colonial atrocities and for reparations and the return of African antiquities. So do you think that Western influence has had any kind of positive impact on the continent or elevated Africa in any way?
Look, the Western influence in the African continent has not been positive in terms of if you look at the deep-seated problems that have happened. I mean, Western society entered Africa with a presumption that it is superior culturally, socially, economically, and politically. And it was on that basis that they rationalized the abuse that they effected on African people, the dispossession of their land, and the theft of the wealth of African people. The logic to it was that we were less than human beings. So their influence is premised on us not being worthy of being within the so-called barriers or categories of humans. We did not produce or farm on land and participate in the capitalist global economy. We did not encroach land with fences. We did not do certain things in Western ways, and therefore that made us less than humans. So there's no Western influence that is positive in terms of the life of African people.
And do you think that post-colonial atrocities should perhaps just be forgotten and we move on from there?
They can't be forgotten, because if you look at the conditions our people live in today, they stem from what happened during colonialism. So you can't say we must forget what continues to determine the life of people today. We can't forget that we were placed in specific spaces in terms of land, which results in us living in shacks. We can't forget that we've been excluded from formal education deliberately, so therefore now we cannot participate in the corporate sector, sophisticated forms of economic organizing, because there's been a deliberate underdevelopment of our people. So to say we must forget that without reversing all of the impacts of colonialism is illogical. So it can't be forgotten until the material changes are made to our people, reparations are paid, and we ensure that we are able to compete at the same level as those who colonized us.
Speaking about the valuables that have been taken here from Africa, of course you have the Cullinan Diamond, which today is part of the Crown Jewels. What is your party's policy on that?
Look, we feel that there's been no remorse shown by the British monarchy for the atrocities they've impacted on African people across the continent and even in other lands for indigenous people in India and the Americas. And that arrogance is perpetuated by them still keeping the crown jewel, which was stolen from South Africa, and still keeping a lot of gold, which was stolen from the African continent and other mineral wealth. So it's a lack of remorse for them to not be able to return those basic things. We know in Xhosa folklore that it still remains that they have King Yintsa's head after defeating him. So there's a lot that needs to be done in terms of reparations, that it includes the return of our mineral wealth and artifacts that belong to African people and indigenous people all over the world.
Have you had any response to your claims?
There's been no response to that. We saw that Prince Charles made a general remark before, leading up to the funeral of Elizabeth, saying that we have a complex history with Africa, but there was no concession as to the fact that there's been atrocities committed at a particular level which continue to have an impact on our people, and that they still their wealth is built on the blacks of African slaves. So there's been no response besides vague statements that do not directly implicate the British monarchy in the crimes that they very well know they've committed.
How do you think bringing back the diamond will actually help South Africa?
Look, symbolically, it would be a sign that there's a remorse by the British monarchy, but also it's worth a lot of money. It could contribute to small-scale development in the life of African people, and it could show that relations are being truly rebuilt between those who colonized us and those who were colonized and conquered. So I think the impact would be much more symbolical than anything else, but there can be some monetary value to the return of that diamond. It could be used to alleviate the student debt in South Africa. It could be used to build housing in certain areas or improve our water infrastructure or our energy infrastructure. So much could be done with it, but symbolically, it would be a step in the right direction of reversing all of those colonial crimes.
Ironically, the town of Cullinan is today a far cry from the palaces of the United Kingdom, where it has found its home as part of the Crown Jewels. It's a prime example of how the West treated Africa as its playground, or should I say, treasure hunt. We visited the birthplace of this controversial find. Return our stolen diamonds. That's what the late Queen Elizabeth's death prompted many Africans to demand, and it's here. With the world's biggest uncut diamond, which forms part of the British monarchy's collection, was found. Although this is something that the Cullinan town should celebrate, it has brought nothing but tears and anger. The town continues to languish in slums, while the British royal house sits with stolen billions on top of their heads.
The Cullinan diamond mine is just the mine that we know that is doing nothing at all, doing a little, in fact, because of its things that are not giving any hope and future to this community. That's a little that I know. And for the fact that the diamond that we or the mine that we are talking about that has produced one of the biggest diamonds in the world, but the community is still suffering even today. So. Remember, blacks were the ones who were working those mines during your gold rush and during those years. So, yes, whites will always claim whatever that the blacks are working with their own bare hands. They will always claim it. So, no white man has discovered that thing. But again, you must remember that. Most of the mining industry, or specifically the diamond industry, has killed that market for us to even cut it here locally. So bring it back for what? It's still going to come back here to say, no, it's back. Then take it back to England to cut it, be processed, to do the jewelries and whatever, then... If that's a dream to be realized, I wish to live when that day comes. But that diamond won't come back. But the only thing that the mine that can do here is to develop this area, develop its people socially and otherwise. Take them to school, because we lack lots of things here.
We spoke to Chris Bishop, an independent media journalist in the United Kingdom. and got his comments.
Hi, Chris, and welcome to Africa Now. Can you share with us a little bit of the history of how Western countries have been stealing from Africa?
Well, what I can say is a lot of it has gone on in the last century, from where you're sitting in Johannesburg to the Mediterranean Sea. I mean, there were artifacts, there were precious stones, there were precious pieces of art that were just taken. But you have to understand, you know, the colonial mentality was that, well, we're here, we're in control, we've got guns, we can take what we want. You know, no one is there to say otherwise. And in that time, in the last, say, 150 years, before the continent got independence, there was a lot of stuff taken, and again, almost with impunity. But the Cullinan Diamond was a little bit more complicated than that. But essentially, you'd have to argue that it was kind of like the same gravy.
How did the Cullinan Diamond eventually end up in the United Kingdom?
They decided, the then minority government in South Africa, they decided to give it to the British government, believe it or not, to heal the wounds of the Anglo-Boer War, which ended at about the turn of the century. But this was in 1907. And it's ironic when you think about it. I mean, your country was devastated by a war, and then you're giving something to somebody else to heal the wounds, the victors to heal the wounds of this. But anyway, and so they got this diamond. And funnily enough, there's a story behind it. The fact that they said they were going to send it by ship to England. And essentially, what happened was they used the ship as a decoy, and they actually there was nothing on the ship, and they sent the Cullinan Diamond by parcel post. Imagine, like Royal Mail.
But do you think that the royal family would support one day giving the diamond back?
It is an example for you. I don't know whether you know this, your history, but during the war, Adolf Hitler had a plan to take Nelson's Column in London and then take it down and rebuild it in Berlin as a trophy. Now, if that had happened, and years later, you know, the war was over and we're all friends again, you know, wouldn't it have been great to have got Lord Nelson back up in where he was before, you know, just to say, you know, that's part of our heritage. And I can see it the same way. I mean, I can see why. But again, my feeling about it is, yeah, it's a quick fix. Why don't they just do it? I mean, it's not like the royal family short of money. It's not like, you know, they're going to miss it. They've got plenty of other gems. Some of the Cullinan actually were in the Queen's private collection. They weren't owned by the state. Send it back. But again, I would say, okay, let's make something of it. Let's make it a tourist attraction. Let's make it into a way in which people can get money, you know, out of it, and way in which people can earn, create wealth around it. Otherwise, what does it do? It just sits in a glass case in another country.
Is Africa ever going to get the diamond back? What do you think?
Whether or not they're ever going to go back to Africa, I don't know. It's a very complicated situation. I mean, one would have thought in the current climate that the royal family is not short of diamonds and jewels and the like, would say, okay, there you are, you know, have it back. I think that in some ways it's very sensitive to the royal family. I mean, you look at it when the Queen died. Charles was out shaking hands with people, and I saw this bit of on television, and some guy said, hey, you're spending millions on your mother's funeral of our money. And here we are, we're struggling to pay our bills and our electricity bills, which is true. But the point is, and John's, oh my gosh, you know, go away. But the point is that, the royal family lives, it works on another level. They're not, perhaps not as, as sensitive to the will of the people as us. But then again, I mean, perhaps they're getting more so. Otherwise, this debate would never even come up, you know? But, it's... I don't know, I just think it's the world's got to grow up sometime and say, like, okay, all right, let's say, right, you, this is your, I mean, as simple as it would be, all you'd have to do is lever it out of the scepter and the crown and say, there you go, with security guards, and take it to South Africa, and it's a done deal. It's not like rocket science.
But the United Kingdom is guilty not only for taking the Cullinan Diamond, Recently, it returned Zimbabwean warrior skulls that Western colonialists took as trophies during the colonial wars. We travel now to neighboring Zimbabwe, where although many are happy with the return of their skulls, it doesn't change history.
Behind me is the statue of Zimbabwe's famous liberation war hero known as Mbuyane Handa, whose remains are also believed to have been taken by the British and are set to be returned back to the country with the remaining skulls. Zimbabwe is preparing for the return of warrior skulls that were taken as trophies during the liberation struggle against British colonial rule, a development that has led the whole country into jubilation.
These are our heroes. We can't be happy here after independence when we have the remains of our national heroes remaining outside the country. We want them brought back home and given a decent burial, because already we know that there are 11 remains of our national heroes that have now been identified, well, not by name, but the fact that they are of Zimbabwean origin. It keeps us reminded that we were once conquered by the white settler regime, and the fact that we are now independent, and if we are here without those remains, it makes us appear like we haven't completed the whole journey.
But it's not all about bringing back. Some of it's about taking down.
Who are the people that we want to put there on statues that have accomplished something here in Namibia? Think about it in terms of that. Instead of everybody getting angry, okay, fine, the statue was removed, the statue is gone, we don't need the statue there, we can make way for something else there. But I mean, we know it's not to get upset for the statue that's been removed.
How I feel about it is, I personally feel like the statue of Kurt Van Francois was supposed to be taken down way back in independence, when Namibia gained independence in 1990, to reinstill and re-empower the minority and the people that suffered under the rule of Kurt Van Francois.
So I can see that point of view, and you know, if it gets removed, it should probably go somewhere where we go to view history, like a museum. We should still have a place for people to see this, to see what the past was, people to know who those characters were and so on. So I can understand that from that point of view. I just don't think it's a good idea to try and hide your history or try and remove it, try and reshape things.
Yes, it is a blessing to see that after 120 years, at least there is some kind of belief and hope being restored in our people. The statue is being removed. It's a very big move for the people of the country that felt the trauma and the pain. Yes, the suffering and the pain is never going to be removed, but at least this is one step closer to justice and to peace and to unity and to bring back that color and vibration in the culture.
The discussion of repatriation is not just about objects, it's also about the people, their suffering and the right to an identity. And while the public debate is mostly focused on African art, objects tell only half the story. The continued suffering of African people tells the rest. This has led to the strong need for name changes, like on the country's roads. I'm standing currently in Pixlika Isake Seme Street, formerly known as Sawa Street. The new name honors a leading figure in the liberation history of South Africa. Pixlika Isake Seme was the founding member of the African National Congress, the ANC, and he later served as President General of the organization. The street is also home to Luthuli House, the ANC's headquarters.
We visited the studio of African historian and South African sculptor Patika Ntuli to gain more insight on his views of stolen African antiquities.
For many years, Western countries and their history books have portrayed Africans as uncivilized and uneducated people. Yet they still stole our valuables, our artworks, and our ideas. I'm with South African sculptor Patika Ntuli, for whom the fight to get these art pieces back to Africa is real. It touches the very core of his work. Has any of your work been stolen by Western countries?
Yeah, no, I had some pieces stolen when I was in Swaziland, and even when I was up in the UK. I think about twice where the paintings and the drawing you know, just kind of, you know, disappeared. But I was flattered that somebody loved my work.
How would you feel if it had been and your art was sitting in Western museums?
Yeah, I think that's one of the most kind of very painful, you know, things. How a work of art is born. The turmoils, the struggles, the juggling that takes place in somebody's mind and all to produce a work of art. And after all of that struggle and all of that power, your work benefits, you know, somebody else. It's just about one of the most cruelest things that can be visited upon a talented person or even an ordinary person.
And why do you feel Western countries are still holding on to these treasures?
The Western countries are holding on to these antiquities because they are worth a lot of money, and two, they are very great you know, works of art, and they know that as long as the human race, you know, exists, those pieces are going to play a very vital in a role of you know, tracing us and keeping us, you know, in line in terms of the great things we are capable of doing.
And what measures do you think Africans have taken to get our valuables back? And do you think we ever will?
I think, I mean, gradually, you know, some countries are releasing, you know, some of the things, because the very natives of that place are beginning to raise questions about their country's, you know, theft. I think gradually, not all of the works would be returned, of course, but a lot of works will be, you know, returned. But the politics of art and the politics of nationalities and nation states, this. Remember, in 1977, when all African countries held FESTAC, the Festivals of Arts and Culture, all of them, not even any Western or Far Eastern media, you know, attended that. They needed one symbol of the Idia mask, ivory mask, you know, from Nigeria, that Britain had, that we would like to have that as our sign of unity. Or loan it to us then, if you don't. They even refused to loan that thing, for symbolically these works are powerful politically and ideologically.
Western countries portrayed Africans as uncivilized and uneducated people in history books. What do you make of that?
I think that question can only be answered by you know, poet Chikaya Utamsi, who's late now, who said, they give you what they can no longer hold. Right? People invite you to a party, they eat your stomach first and then your memory. That's what colonialism has really done. So people like those are not going to give you something unless they no longer you know, need it.
And why is African art so special? As an African artist yourself, what message are you trying to convey through your art and sculpting?
I mean, my own you know, work has got to do with, you know, spirits, has got to do with spirituality. It has got to do with, you know, my life as a political, you know, animal who was meant for an early death but who managed to, you know, to survive. It is more concerned. The one that won the Global, you know, Fine Arts Awards, it also got to do with bones and beads. It's more about the issue of an eco-world, because African cultures are eco-viable worlds that have been created. That is why when a child is born, you don't even cut the umbilical cord. You wait for it to drop, and then you are going to bury that umbilical cord and plant a tree to link a child, you know, to the tree. I am Sompisi, I'm the master of the hyena, I'm Ntlokwe Mama, master of the mamba snake, you know, so that whoever attacks the mamba snake or the hyena, it's I'm a conservationist. All our proverbs are going to tell you that Mtomba Unyelwa, don't pollute the rivers. Everything is about eco, you know, viability. That's what our culture is. That's what my art, you know, seems to be, I wanted to address.
The scramble for Africa and its resources over the past centuries has left a trail of devastation in its wake. From plundered minerals to stolen artifacts, the voices from this continent are determined to be heard. Well, that brings us to the end of this week's show. We hope you enjoyed it.
Next week, we will explore the search for alternative currencies to the American dollar by African countries. Please feel free to reach out with your ideas, as we'd love to hear your input and feedback. You can always catch us on Odyssey or on TikTok. Well, that's it from me and the team from here on the tip of the African continent. Until next week, Salani Gahle, stay well.